hear Smashing Pumpkins in church, did you? A little bit of an intro there. Well, we're real thrilled, again, you guys decided to spend a little time with us. My name is Jason Malik, and as I mentioned, we're beginning a series on mission today. How many of you remember high school? I think I do, a little bit. There's actually a couple of high school, middle schoolers here, so you guys don't have to remember. You're just living it, right? Pay attention, because I think this will be fun and relevant to you. How many remember college? Those of you who went to college, remember college? One of those deals? During my adolescence, life seemed to come at me really, really fast. But I remember the day I graduated from college, and then I remember kind of the subsequent maybe 9 months post-college. See, I had a lot of what I would describe maybe high-powered friends. They kind of jetted up. I went to University of Virginia on the East Coast. So they jetted up to New York City and kind of got a banking job. Or they headed out to Chicago and became, you know, advertising executives. Went out to L.A., they acted. And I went home to Atlanta and lived with my mom and dad. Mom, no offense, that wasn't the coolest thing I could have done back in the day. Not only that, I waited tables. So here I'd gone to Virginia, got my bachelor's, really felt like I was a go-getter, and yet there was a lot that I felt like I was lacking. There was a lot that I felt like was somewhat meaningless and somewhat purposeless. Isn't it true that there's a time in all of our lives when we kind of move from a season, when things are kind of done for us, life comes at us and is kind of handed to us, and then there's a pivot point. There's a transition when suddenly we're kind of on our own. Now, you may remember that. Thinking back to elementary school, think about it. Everything was done for you. You were registered in school. You were driven everywhere. You were fed. You were put in bed. All of that. It was kind of fun. There wasn't a whole lot new. You just kind of ran with the flow. Then you entered middle school and kind of the world was opened even further, right? You suddenly had new friends. You had new classes. You went to new places, new experiences. You were learning all kinds of great things. High school was no different. In fact, many people kind of wanted to skid through middle school, right? That's that hard season. So you get to high school and you have even more friends. More freedom, more responsibility. College, that kind of explodes exponentially, doesn't it? Because suddenly there's very few, if any, people who are actually telling you what you got to do. So you may have had a car, and that, you know, obviously opened up the world for you. You had all kinds of opportunities to do new things. And then, maybe like me, if you graduated from college, you found yourself kind of asking the question, what's new now? I mean, during my early years of life, there was so much momentum, there was so much excitement, there were so many new things coming at me. And then I went home and I started waiting tables, and frankly, I loved waiting tables, but Tuesday looked like Monday, and Wednesday looked like Tuesday, and Thursday looked like Wednesday, and I just kind of felt like it was Groundhog Day, right? And I kind of woke up asking myself, is this really what I prepared all these years to do? Is this really why my mom and dad prepared and equipped me to go and be a productive citizen? Is this really it? No, it has nothing to do with what I was doing in life, because I think every single one of us eventually reaches that pivot point, that transition in life, where the question is no longer who or what or where. Remember, in high school, it was who's going out tonight? Where are you going? What are you all doing? You know, those are the questions that we asked. But when I found myself sitting on my mom and dad's front porch, the question wasn't who, wasn't what, and it wasn't where. The question that I found myself asking is, why? What's going on here? Who am I? What is this all about? Is this really it? Is this what I prepared for all these years, or was prepared for all these years? So again, it wasn't who, what, or where. The question I found myself asking was why. And I think all of us go through times in our lives. In fact, if you're not there yet, or maybe you're actually in that phase where you're asking the question why, you're not alone. Because every single one of us goes through life, and eventually we bump up against that kind of momentum, that sense of newness. And maybe it starts to go away and we wonder, is this it? Is this really what life is all about? Now, you've probably seen people try to rediscover or regain that kind of momentum season in life, haven't you? when you try to rediscover what's new. Some people go out and they buy all kinds of things. They buy, you know, boats and houses, and they get all kinds of new relationships. They oftentimes ditch old relationships and find new ones to attempt to rediscover that newness. They get a new job. They move to a new location, all in attempt to rediscover that excitement, that zest, that newness. Many people, I've actually got a good friend who is ultra, ultra wealthy, and I bet you anything, he could sustain that season for the rest of his life. But I would also bet that deep down within him, just like deep down within you and me, there's a question that's rooted, that's trying to make its way out. And that question is, why? What is this all about? Is it really just about trying to achieve that newness, that excitement, that enthusiasm? Or is there more to this life than this life? See, I think all of us wrestle with that question. And the great thing is, the Bible has a lot to say about it. In fact, we're going to be taking a look at a passage today that's from a section called the Sermon on the Mount. If you don't have a Bible, we actually have a bunch here, and you're welcome to raise your hands. You can keep this Bible. We're going to be taking a look at the book of Matthew, chapter 5. And again, if you'd like to follow along with us, you can do so. It's in this Bible. I think it's on page 953 or something like that. So raise your hand if you want a Bible, and you can grab one. Again, take it with you. Matthew, chapter 5. We'll start with verse 13 in just a second. This is on page, no, not 953, it's 957. 957 in the Starting Point Bible. Before we jump in, a couple of things you need to know. This is one of the most profound, maybe the most profound, spiritual or religious passages ever spoken. In fact, Gandhi himself, I think he was referring to this passage when Gandhi said, "I love your Christ. I just wish the rest of the world would live like him." Can you imagine? Somebody who wasn't a practicing follower of Jesus said, "I love your Christ. I just wish the rest of the world, including Christians, would live like he said we should live." I think Gandhi was talking about this very passage. It's one of the most profound spiritual passages. If you're not a Bible person, a Bible reader, but just want to familiarize yourself with who Jesus is, this passage, the Sermon on the Mount, would be an incredible starting place or starting point for you. We're actually going to dive in a little bit into the story. So let me give you some background. Jesus, this happens fairly early in Jesus' life. He's in his probably early 30s, and he has been called by God to deliver an incredible message to the world, which we're about to read. Now, he has been, for a couple of years maybe, wandering through the wilderness in Jerusalem, Judea, Galilee, and as he wandered, he preached, he healed, he did amazing things, so much so that he started to have followers, literally crowds of people follow him everywhere he went. This happens to be one of those very days. Jesus is hanging out somewhere near Galilee, and he crawls up on a hill because there's a bunch of people who are kind of crowded around. Probably not many more than this. In fact, think about it. Jesus didn't have microphones, so there couldn't have been a whole lot of people who were standing there listening or at least hearing what he said. But Jesus delivered an amazing message that we now call the Beatitudes, and it's basically describing how you and I should live and how you and I should view God and view one another. He basically took the Ten Commandments and said, that is the foundation, but this is the way you should truly live. So he's just walked through this amazing passage, and now Jesus finds himself with people waiting on purpose, on meaning. You see, the folks who were listening to Jesus, they weren't necessarily Christians. There were probably a lot of Jews who were there, but these weren't people who fully got who Jesus was. So they were standing or sitting, listening to Jesus, saying, "Jesus, tell me not only who you are, but who am I? And what's my purpose? What's my mission? How can I live on mission?" And here's how Jesus responds. This is in verse 13 of chapter 5 of Matthew. Jesus says, "You are the salt of the earth." Now, if you're like me, you kind of furrow your brow and go, salt of the earth, huh? What exactly does that mean? Now, something you and I don't quite get, because salt is really commonplace today, is that salt had tremendous value. Not only was it a flavor enhancer like we use it today, but it was a preserver of food. If you were somebody who was going to stay alive, be sustained, you had to have salt. Salt was so valuable that it was used as a form of currency. You could be paid for doing your job, a day's wages, in salt. So I think what Jesus was saying is, now you people who are sitting out here, you probably don't feel like you have purpose. You may not feel like you have value. In fact, you probably think that the only people who have value is Rome and Roman citizens and those who are in Roman government. But the reality is, you are salt. You're the salt of the earth, meaning you've got tremendous worth. Even more than that, I love this because I think it's a play on words. Jesus is saying, I think you are a preserver of the world. I think you're a preserver of life. You may look around and see that everything seems to be falling apart around you. Well, guess what? You're responsible to preserve this earth. Not only that, much like salt, you're responsible to enhance the world. You're literally, quite literally, the spice of life. You are to be the people who bring life to life. You are the salt of the earth. Jesus goes on, but if the salt loses its saltiness, i.e. becomes tasteless, that's literally what it means, how can it be made salty again? Again, this is a really interesting play on words. Loses its taste or becomes tasteless or loses its saltiness. The Greek word there is morano. Morano, moron. So Jesus is using a funky play on words because the word morano not only means loses its flavor, but it means becomes foolish. Jesus is saying, if you become foolish, how are you ever going to become wise again? Don't lose your wisdom. So far we have you're of great worth, you are a preserver of life, you're an enhancer of life, and you're wise, or you have wisdom. He continues on. How can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. This is in verse 14. This is where Jesus really, I believe, begins to lay it on thick. Because I think if you're like me, you know, if we're listening to Jesus perched up on a hill, we're still a little puzzled. I mean, come on, Jesus. We're following you. You got to deliver the goods, right? You got to tell us who we are in relation to you and in relation to the world. And I think this is where Jesus reveals maybe the most important message of his entire life. You see, again, people who were sitting listening to Jesus, they didn't really have a whole lot of worth. Some were Jews, some were Gentiles, maybe Greek and Roman citizens, maybe some slaves, could have been free people, black, white, male, female, it didn't matter. Here's what Jesus says. He says, you want purpose? You want a reason to get up in the morning? You want to know how God views you and what your mission is in the world? You want to know what it looks like to live on mission? Verse 14, you are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. Now, if you were Jewish, sitting and listening to Jesus, this would have harkened back to something that you had heard all throughout your life. Again, Jewish people read an entire different section of the Bible called the Old Testament. And in the Old Testament, there was a prophet named Isaiah. And Isaiah said that the Jewish nation called Israel was to be a light to the Gentiles. Anybody who was a non-Jew, the Jewish people were to be a light to the Gentiles. So Jews sitting there would have said, oh, I get what he's saying. We are to be the most powerful people. Jesus is now going to create this amazing kingdom like the nation of Israel. We're going to be rich. We're going to be powerful. Jesus says, no, God's kingdom is shifting. We're going to redefine what it means to be a light to the world. You bring everything that you are, whether you're a mechanic, a florist, whether you're unemployed, whether you're a student, you bring everything that you are and you be a light to the world. The next verse, verse 15, Jesus says, the rest of verse 14, a city on a hill cannot be hidden. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. We're reading the TNIV here, which is a version of the Bible that's very, very contemporary so that you and I can kind of read through it. But if you look at other versions of the scriptures, there's actually an additional word set in there that I think is really important. The word is, you are a city set on a hill cannot be hidden. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. In other words, there's a sense of divine intention. When Meredith and I were first married, we actually moved up to Boston, where I did some graduate studies. And if you know anything about Boston or New England, Boston is literally, quite literally, a city set upon a hill. The Pilgrims and the Puritans who came over from Europe, when they settled there, they wanted to do everything they could to proclaim God's name to the world. And so they first settled in the city of Boston, maybe not first, but very shortly after Plymouth, settled in Boston, up the road a spell. And when they did, they literally set it on a hill. In fact, there's an area in Boston called Beacon Hill, because they wanted Boston, the Puritans wanted Boston to be the greatest example of God's nature and God's people in all of the earth. You see, they set that city on a hill. Just like Jesus says, you are a city, or like a city set on a hill. What that means for you and me is, if you are a mechanic, if you are a student, if you're a florist, if you're unemployed, no matter where you are, you have been strategically placed to be a light to the world. Now, that may be hard to believe, because I don't know your circumstances, but I know a lot of people in a lot of crazy circumstances, and so often in retrospect, you can see the purpose and meaning of those times, those seasons, can't you? But Jesus is saying, not just you're a light, but exactly where you are, you're a light, like a city set on a hill. Verse 15. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and say, oh, what a nice man. Doesn't say that, does it? Okay, so let's try again. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and say, my goodness, their parents raised them so well. Aren't they sweet? No. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and say, oh, I want my kids to grow up to be just like them. No. In the same way, let your light shine before others. It's not that you hold a light, it's that you are a light. And that people, the world, may see our good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Now, I don't know about you, but if you're somebody who maybe has been resistant to Christianity or any kind of religion, my guess is because the Christians who you've met didn't read this passage. Too often, Christians talk about what they believe, but they, or we, fail to put it in practice. But I don't think you can debate what this passage says. It says that the world should see our good deeds. In other words, what you do is as, and maybe even more important than what you believe. Because as the world sees your good deeds, it's supposed to point to God the Father. So in many ways, what you believe is less important than how that is put into practice in the real world. You and I are to help people connect the dots between who we are, what we do, and who we worship. We are to live in such a way that we are to help the world connect who we are with what we do and who we worship. I think that's what Jesus is saying in this. And so no matter where you are, again, you may push back and say, you know what, I'm not really sure who I worship. I'm not really sure about this Jesus guy. But the reality is, the crowd who was sitting in front of Jesus, many of them probably felt exactly the same. They had gotten roped into going because, you know, Uncle Jane or Aunt Jane, Uncle John said, you need to hear this guy preach. And they kind of sat before him and said, oh, that's kind of interesting. You may have had a lot of people who were very, very committed to who Jesus was. They maybe didn't see all that he did, but all they knew is they saw healing. And I'm going to follow the guy who heals somebody. I've got some ailments myself. And then everywhere in between, people who just showed up to listen and people who are true followers of Jesus. So the scripture, the text says, no matter where you are, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. You may say, you know, I don't know enough about Jesus to really kind of go there. Or how can I be significant enough to actually be a light to the world? Well, here's how I know it's true, because somebody in your life led you to where you are today. Somebody in your life led you to where you are today. There was something that happened, maybe a family member, could have been a coworker, a friend or neighbor. Somebody led you to where you are today, and I guarantee you, they didn't think that it was a strategic placement in your life. And yet you would probably say, you know what? Had they not moved in, had we not done school together, had we not sat next to each other, you know, as office cube mates, had we not been friends in college, I guarantee you, you probably wouldn't be sitting here. Because the reality was, they were strategically placed in your life. So no matter where you are, no matter how insignificant you think your life is, your career is, your existence is, the reality is, you and me, we are a light to the world. And you and I are to live in such a way that the world connects the dots between who we are, what we do, and who we worship. There are a couple of people actually in the room who were those people to me, my wife and my mom. And that probably goes without saying, because family members are somewhat obvious. They obviously had a tremendously profound impact in my life. And yet, my first year of college, I roomed with a guy named Derek Hussman. He's probably the very first person who I can look to and say, he lived in such a way that helped me connect the dots between who he was, how he lived, and who he worshiped. Derek Hussman had a profound impact, a permanent impact on my life. There are at least a couple of folks that are a part of our community who I'd love for you to meet. Two who aren't here tonight. Their names are Bruce and Tony Sonnenfeld. Bruce and Tony get what it means to live their lives in such a way that they help people connect the dots between who they are, how they live, and who they worship. They live in such a way that if you meet them, and if you haven't, I really encourage you to do so. When you meet them, you'll be left saying, I gotta have what you have. Tell me what that's all about. The great thing about Bruce and Tony is they're not heavy-handed. With gentleness and respect, they'll basically say, here's why we live the way that we do. They're an amazing, amazing testimony. And I think every single one of us in this room has the exact same opportunity. So you're looking for purpose. You're looking for meaning. You're looking for mission. It's to be a light. To be a light to the whole world. Here's what happens when we don't. Just like the folks who continue to seek after the momentum, the excitement, the enthusiasm. If they suppress that light, they live a life of either meaninglessness or they have that gnawing sense of discontent. In fact, to use Jesus' illustration, they're like a candle, like a light. Gets put out. Now, if it were dark in here, something would have just changed. If you and I choose to ignore answering that question of why, to live life on mission, on purpose, we will live with that gnawing sense of meaninglessness, of purposelessness. We will always be chasing after that new, that excitement, that enthusiasm, the new house, the new relationship, the new toys. But if you live life on purpose, if we live life on mission, if we are a light to the world, we will experience a sense of contentment like never before. In just a minute, I'm going to invite Danny and the band to come back up. But I want to pray and then give us just a moment to kind of think about this. So in silence, we don't have a lot of spaces, at least I don't have a lot of spaces in my life, where I can just reflect on life, on purpose, on meaning, on mission. So we'll take just a couple of minutes in silence and reflect on that, and then the band will come up. So bow your heads and pray with me, please. Dear God, thank you for Jesus' message. Thank you for the Sermon on the Mount and the amazing and profound way that he cast vision for what it means to have purpose and meaning and mission. I pray, God, for each of us here today, that you would help us to discover our mission. For those of us who have, thank you for revealing that to us. I pray that you would use us in the lives of many, many people. And for those that haven't, God, give us discerning eyes to seek mission, to seek purpose, to live life on mission. I pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.